and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is the place where we are indeed simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes, and we are simplifying... I was so proud of myself, too. And we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Damn, well done.
This is all from memory for me.
Yeah, I failed. We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, alternative transportation, arts and culture, communications, and the interwebs, heartbeat-shaped cross-continental wonder stomps.
Is that in reference to anything, or is that just
yeah,
loose ideas you had sitting around that you swept into a pile?
That happens a lot.
That's all good. No, it's fine.
That was a precise reference to
full support of that.
Our guest's conversation earlier about he said it was like a heartbeat shape.
There we go. Okay. Well, you have a better memory than I. It's been just long enough for all of that to filter out of my memory. So,
fucking
A. Speaking of that, that's our guest. Franklin Jones from Beeline Sustainable Urban Delivery. Look at the memory on me on that one. And we had him in earlier to share some beer and have him talk about his company that he started, which is fantastic, fascinating. And that's an interview that you'll hear a little bit later in the show. As for now, here we are, you and I.
And my candy cane.
And your candy cane, yeah. Oh, are you... Oh, man, you're going to do this on mic. Look at you go. I mean, I like a candy cane as much as the next guy.
I won't chew any more of it into the
It's okay. No, it happens from time to time. I went to a show at the Doug Fir Lounge on Friday
night.
Hang on,
Brock.
What was that?
Hey, how was your weekend?
It was great, man. I went to a show at the Doug Fir Lounge on Friday night. Saw Tango Alpha Tango with modestly mediocre act from Tacoma, I think. And then, who else? It was some other band. I don't remember who. It was some guy that sounded like Jeff Buckley. it was good act, but I don't remember who they were at
one
all.
One in five acts in Portland.
Tango Alpha Tango was great.
The last great rock and roll band in Portland, Oregon.
That's right. Did I say that? No,
you've said that.
Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, for me, I have a hard time accepting new things, so... So all the stuff that the kids are into,
I'm babies.
I do, and America and Jesus.
He's pretty old, actually. He's been around for a while.
No, the Tango Alpha Tango puts on a great show. So anyways, we were there and had a beer, had a great time. And then after leaving the Doug Fir Lounge, walked around the corner to where we had locked our bikes in one of those fancy schmancy bike corrals that the city of Portland has put in. And we found to our dismay that my bicycle's Brooks saddle was missing. So this is the first time I've had a component of any sort of value stolen from my bike. It was kind of traumatizing. I had certain tools and things. I think I left a bucket, one of my bucket panniers on my bike last year. Mm-hmm. And so I lost a pair of gloves and some tools and that sort of thing. But I'd never had actually any pieces of my bike stolen before. So this was the first time. It is. And at first I couldn't believe it, but it was like, you know, there's nothing there. And I didn't take my saddle off before the show. So it's bound to have gone somewhere. The guy next to me lost his saddle and his headset, like the whole handlebars shifters and everything. So I'm not sure why they took his headset.
And you said yours was a quick release.
Mine was a quick release saddle.
His was a slow release?
His was just like basically, I think, some sort of hex screw holding the thing on. So, I mean, the thieves came prepared.
And it was in a corral, like as in a street-side open corral with a soft perimeter of paint?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The kind that you see all over Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. But... yeah, anyways, it was...
never in Maine.
It's kind of sad. I had thought about trying to ride my bike home. We were there with my wife and our friend Aaron, who has been on the show before. And Team Sincerity. It was actually the Team Sincerity reunion. We all we acknowledged that fact as we rode in
barfed.
Together. No, none of us got sick. I already had a cold. I still kind of have one, so you might hear that in my voice. But anyways, I was kind of bummed.
Well, the Brooks saddle, you've spent the past better part of a year now letting it form itself to your posterior.
Right, and
it was a rough few months of you're submitting to its terms of discomfort, and finally it's comfortable to you.
Right, right. Well, it's never discomfort, I don't think, as much as it is just like it's not formed to you yet.
Pre-comfort.
Mm-hmm. Pre-comfort. That's a good word
for
it.
Okay. But the fact of the matter is, it's going to be, at best, pre-comfortable for this thief.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyways, I was thinking one of the...
I take comfort meditating on his saddle.
That's right, yeah. Hopefully, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, but I had a honey-colored saddle, I think, is the color that Brooks refers to as the shade of leather that
the
it's made from.
The leathery color, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just kind of a natural-looking color. And I'd always kind of thought, well, if I could go back and buy it again, I would get one that matched my bike's color scheme because it's like black and silver. So,
and you care a lot about your colors.
I do. I care about my appearance greatly, as my status of having shaved will tell you. Actually, not. I go many days. I shave like once a week. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways, I went in and I said, well, that Brooks saddle was a great saddle and might as well get another one. So,
well, there you have it.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I picked up a nice, shiny, slick, new black Brooks saddle, the B67 with springs in back and everything. And so I also picked up a kryptonite cable, which I can slide through the rails. And the funny thing is, I was telling our friend David Hetty this earlier that Bike Snob, which I read religiously, that's he had something about like being a dork because he
last time I tried cleaning the screen off
he just said like, hey, I'm a dork because I put a cable through the rails of my Brooks saddle. And I thought, uh-huh, that's funny, but that's a good idea. I should do that sometime. And then I swear, like, either that night or the night after is the night that we went to the show and my saddle got stolen. So I got a 7-foot really big, heavy-duty kryptonite cable to add to my U-lock. So now I can secure, with relative certainty, every part of my bike, unless I leave it out, like, overnight or something. Or unless they come really prepared with, like, insane bolt cutters or something. So, yeah. Anyways, I guess be warned all that, you know, if you live in an urban center or even if you live somewhere.
Don't go to the Doug Fir.
No, I mean, if you do go to the Doug Fir or anywhere else, make sure your stuff is secure. It's an ounce of prevention, or in this case, $14 of kryptonite is worth a pound of, I can't finish the metaphor, cure.
I lost you there, buddy. I lost you there.
So anyways, that's what I spent my weekend doing. That and going to Bikecraft, which our friend Amos was running. It's a fantastic event. And getting over a cold and spending a lot of my evenings and mornings clearing my nasal passages.
Oh, yes.
So what is your weekend like, or has it been, and your week and other exciting
things?
About
once a week I have insomnia. So I had a bit of that last night.
Mm.
That was good.
Okay. And it's not due to the fact that your bedroom is below the studio where we also watch movies at night.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. Woke up in the middle of the night.
Mm. So it was post 12 monkeys then that you woke up and said, hey, I can't sleep.
Yes, it was in the 13th monkey, I think. Possibly.
All right.
14th. It's been a pleasant week for me.
Well, that's good.
It's been sunny here in Portland, Oregon. I got to ride my bike a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, sunny but cold.
Yeah, I got to go up Terwilliger for the first time.
Yeah.
Never been up that gorgeous view.
Did you call it Terwilliger?
No, Terwilliger.
My wife did that for like the first year, and I was too shy to correct her because I didn't want to come off as like the guy that's like, I know more about Portland than you do. So I just let her say Terwilliger until someone else corrected her, and then I think... Then
she like, how come you didn't?
Why didn't
you
ever say anything?
Me?
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I was shy.
It's Glisten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Glisten Street.
Yeah, people hate me for that.
That's okay.
Yeah, well,
it is correct.
It is correct. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, there are.
I thought even
all of these are you trying to like polish the screen of your eye device?
Yes, yeah. There we go. That worked.
Okay.
Well, I was eating my handy cane over it, and
that's what you get for eating candy canes in the studio.
Fucking A. Steve Jobs is
good times. Shall we dig into our mailbag real quick?
We're petering out quick. Here. Let's see that.
You've got mail.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, and you've got, sorry, you got that whole thing there.
Yeah, it happens. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Oh, we're going to do mailbag before headlines. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
So Let's start off with the fact that, hey, Gus gave us the whole quote.
Yeah, yeah, because we were talking about, I think I had said something about that it could either be cold or damn cold, kind of trying to reference Twain, but not remembering the quote, and he sent it to us on the Facebook.
They're lies, they're damned lies, and they're statistics.
Yeah, which is funny, but I'm not sure if I understand why it's funny. I like it.
Because statistics are so, deeply...
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So
they're beyond lies, even if they're rooted in truth very much.
They're even beyond damn
which
lies.
Which is why it's so hard to detangle yourself from their misleading.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, you get tangled in there. Lies, you can detangle yourself a bit more.
Okay.
That's my interpretation on it.
Good work.
Thank you. So Film by Bike says, thanks for talking about Film by Bike Lounge at Bikecraft. Hope to see you there. Come hang out in the lounge with us. BTW, you should have Amos on more often. You threesome was hilarious. Your threesome was hilarious.
It wasn't actually a threesome by any stretch of the imagination, but but it was fun. We had a great time. The bike lounge, the Film by Bike Lounge at Bikecraft was fantastic. They have a large television set and some couches, and I think they had free candy canes at their disposal.
What?
Yeah.
Hi.
There were samples of a make your own Gorp bar, I think.
Ooh.
Showing off what you can do with bulk foods. And then they had Film by Bike DVDs for sale. When Adele and I were there, that was the morning after I had lost my saddle. I just didn't think about that until it happened. But yeah, my saddle had been stolen. I woke up with a terrible cold and just a lot of other things all conspiring to make me in a terrible mood. So I hope as I was there, I did see Amos. I said, hello and congratulations. I hope I didn't come off as reserved or angry or anything, because I was just kind of depressed, more so than I usually am. But I did. I didn't get a chance, anyways, to stay in the Film by Bike Lounge. But I did get to see it, and it was fantastic. So,
woo!
Much respect to them.
Yeah, absolutely. So next up, Carl sent a care package of links.
That's right.
Picture of a bike for 10. That's impressive.
That's 10 people on a bike.
That is what that would be.
Yeah.
Is that exactly what it sounds like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a mom and like 9 kids.
Flintstones, huh?
Yeah.
And some great bike stickers. From peacesupplies.org.
Yeah.
/
There's some good stuff there.
And then also in response, Carl said in response to that picture you took of me. Stuffing the turkey.
That's right.
Turkey. The definite article implies it's a euphemism.
Stuffing a turkey that we were cooking to eat for dinner later.
What are you doing, Brandon? I'm washing my hands. If I said what? I'm washing the hands. Yeah, see?
You do that often? Okay. Yeah,
washing my hands.
So, anyways,
only after I stuff a turkey.
We were making a Thanksgiving dinner post Thanksgiving, and I photographed that.
Yeah, well, and
none
he
of
said,
that is code for
that's
anything.
A whole lot of explanation for his amusing, delightful comment. I'm not even gonna look at a grown man stuffing "quote unquote" a turkey. Aren't there laws in Oregon about that kind of behavior? Isn't he married now? I'm saying this now, but perverted curiosity may get the best of me. Dot, dot, dot.
There we go. Dot. So that's Carl down in California. Carl, by the way, looks strikingly like George Clooney.
Wow.
If you look at his Facebook profile.
Are you buttering him up like a turkey just to get a donation?
Like a turkey. I think he might actually have an actual picture of George Clooney as his photograph.
That's awesome.
But yeah.
I should try that.
Yeah.
But with Ryan Gosling. Johnny K comments, "You guys rock." I'm
Thanks.
Sorry, Johnny, that I made your voice sound like that.
Thanks, Johnny K.
I think I am going to post something for every show now. Something totally off subject and useless. It's not like I'm going to offend anyone since I'm the only one that is posting on the website. By the way, is your mailbag a panier, messenger, or backpack?
Clever. On top of that, he is really the only person that leaves comments on the actual blog, I think. A lot of other people interact with Twitter or Facebook or that sort of thing. But yeah, he is the only one.
A lot of ins, a lot of outs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To answer your question, what is our mailbag?
Our mailbag, well, actually, it's a metaphor. We have, the things which are not actual mail. They're just electronic correspondence that we put into a metaphoric mailbag, which is actually a Google document. So, but that's kind of like a pannier. God. Yeah.
Let's go with it's a bike bucket.
That sounds good. That's I like bike. Okay. I like bike buckets. Yeah.
Some dead air there. Sorry. Then Johnny K later asked, "Hey Alex, check out this. Check this out. A wiki about your issue."
And the issue, of course, is the boil that he had on his posterior during his bike tour.
Lord have mercy. By the way, you probably need to drink a lot more on your tours. Water will help with the sore muscles.
And drink a lot more water.
Oh, that would be it. Yeah. And we'll wash out all kinds of things that can attack your body. That's great to know.
Yeah. The caveat here is that the link that he posted links directly to an issue about boils on your posterior. And there's a photograph of a posterior with boils on it, which I think deserves fair warning before you just like have somebody click through
an NSFL tag.
What?
NSFL. Not safe for life.
Not safe for anything. Yeah, definitely.
NSFA. After his constructive comments, he donated enough for two growlers.
That's right. Yeah. So we have to read anything he says, basically.
For real.
No, thank you, Johnny K. We appreciate it. And I'd like to pimp your which I believe is your private venture, since you're underwriting some of our show costs. But I wasn't sure exactly how to do that. So if you want us to describe what it is that you do and give you some free advertising, let us know.
Yeah. The Bell Stars sent us their sexy new calendar. New was the word there.
Yes, brand new.
As a Christmas gift, along with a sweet note.
Yeah.
They've got a very tasteful, not crass or degrading bicycle-based pinup calendar.
Right, right.
It's some fun photography in there.
Yeah, definitely.
Without being
upset.
Gross.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just celebrating what? Bicycles and fun and beauty and all that.
Yeah.
You can get one, I think.
At the hyperlink.
Yeah, which I did not, I didn't spell it out. So,
golly.
Yeah. It's what? TheBellStarsWith2Rs.com.
Yep.
there's that candy cane again. That was unexpected. I was not expecting that. It was nice to get a package from people from far away. So, good times.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Should we hit our headlines, just a few of them?
Yeah. Just boy, like we've been going through this. We've been taking our damn time here.
We have.
Let's just hit a couple of them.
Just two. Here it is. Something kind of drags when it starts out.
What
I should
can compare
speed that
with
up.
The thrill of a
they
brand
can hear you, bro.
Bike.
I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast.
All right. So first up from the Portland Transport blog, TriMet is considering a bus rapid transit option. They're looking at a few different ways to expand our transit, mass transit infrastructure in this town. And this is exciting to me.
Yeah.
BRT is sort of like the poor person's Max, and it's cool.
Yeah.
It's sort of electric assisted, and you can transition towards a full electric trolley setup.
Did you live in Eugene
under construction, but not when it was the EMX.
Yeah, because the city of Eugene has a fantastic bus rapid transit line that...
and they're going to be expanding it all over the city. Mm.
It was a controversial issue. Cloverfield, Springfield, yeah. Oregon, and then the head of the Statue of Liberty will come crashing down.
That's right.
Into downtown Eugene
on those hipsters. Yep. anyway, so it's a good story. Something that gets me excited about the future of transit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I really like rail. I like the going for the candy cane. It's not. Metaphor for anything. I like light rail a lot, but the big downside of light rail is that you can't modify it very easily. Like once the rails are there, they're there. Whereas bus rapid transit, they still have installations and curb modifications and that sort of thing, but you can take buses anywhere you need them to go, which is kind of nice. And I think the expansions that they're considering are to go to places that are not currently very well served by TriMet. It's places that don't really have connections.
Hmm.
For example, if you want to go from Oregon City to Tualatin, you've got to go basically downtown, I think, before you can start heading the other way, you know, back out of town to the other suburb.
They're trying to give you some laterals instead of some,
and
some concentrics.
Yeah, the amount of people that transport themselves from one place to another between those two places, I think, probably merits some public transportation. So
bingo.
Yeah, fascinating article, very well written over on Portland Transport. Yeah. So.
I'll only do one more. We've got three more we'll put up on the website. But next one on RAI by way of listener Blaine.
Yeah.
A great article about merino wool and how to choose yours.
Oh, yeah. This is – and I haven't actually even read the whole thing, but this is really – it's exhaustive.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It doesn't look like – it gives you like a – let's see here. How to choose wool clothing, putting wool to the test, impressions from the field, a brief overview, wool then and now, kind of like a history. What is merino wool? We got a picture of merino sheep there, which are actually a thing, I guess.
They are.
And then performance characteristics, all the
They're
different
not
stuff.
Abstractions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then a Q&A after that. It's just, it's very exhaustive. So thanks, Blaine. I think this came in on my feed reader from his blog, but this is, it's a pretty great article.
Great.
So well worth looking into.
Yep. And with that, we'll move on to our guest.
That's right. So here comes our interview with Franklin Jones of Beeline Sustainable Urban Delivery. Yeah. And then we'll be right back just to say goodbye on the other side. So this is the Sprocket Podcast. My name is Brock. That's Brandon Rhodes. And we are joined by Franklin Jones of, is it Jones?
It is.
Okay, thank you. I want to make sure I got it right because I all of a sudden I was drawing a blank. So I, that was actually just kind of spitballing.
Yeah, Smith or Jones, just throw one of those out there. You're all set.
Well, thank you for joining us, sir. Thanks for coming in. We are at present enjoying to our bodies the abominable. Is it all it's called, or is it, does it have a bigger name?
It has an even shorter name, the A-bomb.
The A-bomb from Hopworks. Mm-hmm. So anyways, it's 7.1 alcohol percent and by volume. And I haven't even tried it yet, so I'm going to give a little sip real quick.
Cheers.
Yeah, that's lovely. I'm glad we
Isn't
got this.
Isn't that good?
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Well, hey, anyways, you're here with us, Franklin, and wanted to talk a little bit about your company, which you have, that is Beeline Sustainable Delivery.
Beeline Sustainable Urban Delivery.
Okay, I thought there was an urban. Okay, I was thinking of the Hopworks thing. It's got a similar urban.
Yeah, thing. we drop various words along the way, but we always stay with Beeline.
So it started out as like sustainable bikes with three wheels going down the street with stuff on the back.
Delivery.
Okay, and then shortened from there.
Right. Yeah. Now we just at Beeline, and you'll often hear folks go, "Oh, did you see the Beeline?" And I'm like, wow, it's become your best friend now.
It has a definite article in front of it.
That's right. No, it's best known as Beeline Urban Delivery.
So. I've seen them around town here and again, and I've always been impressed. I love the concept. I love the idea that you're a delivery company, but well, explain it for us. Tell us how it works and what it looks like.
Certainly. So, you know, we're often mistaken for a courier company. So, while we are on bikes, we're not a traditional courier company. We're much more in line with a hub and spoke delivery company where we handle the, what you might call the last mile of a larger delivery network.
Okay.
And so our clients are actually the vendors that are supplying goods to restaurants or offices or other stores or service places. So we are a classic middleman. We handle primarily small to medium account deliveries for medium to large companies.
Okay. And that's not a courier service. So like you're not delivering like documents a la carte or something like that. Like you have established routes and customers.
Exactly. The biggest difference is a courier is going to be a dispatched type of business where you'll have somebody sitting on a phone line waiting for somebody to call in and say, hey, you know, this is, you know, Smith, Williams, and Johnson, attorneys at law, and I need the documents taken from this courthouse over there.
Right.
And somebody will come and pick it up, and away you go.
And more than likely, he looks like Joseph Gordon-Levitt and is riding a fixed gear.
Yeah, most likely. That's true. Very talented.
Premium rush.
Very talented across the city riders. However, Beeline is all routed delivery service.
Okay.
So we don't have any dispatching. Everything that comes into us is drop shipped at our warehouse, mm-hmm. and then we fan it out with a large tricycles. Or we actually will go to our clients' warehouses and pick up their product and deliver it if those warehouses are within our radius.
Okay.
So,
and what is your radius then? How do you define your boundaries or borders?
Well, our warehouse is at 7th and Alder in the southeast.
Okay.
And so it's pretty close, right close in. And so we do about a 2 to 2.5 mile radius from there.
Okay.
So when you think about it, all of a sudden, it's like 2 to 2.5 mile radius. What does that look like on a map?
That's like 50th or so? Or?
Yeah. So it puts us right about Mount Tabor in the southeast.
Okay.
Which is right about the end of the primary commercial zone in the Belmont-Hawthorne corridor.
Sure.
To about 26 and Powell in south on the southeast side, to PSU in the southwest, and then continuing north to about northwest Thurman area.
Okay.
Like 24th and Thurman, 25th and Thurman out there.
Yeah.
Up towards kind of Broadway and about 19th or 20th. Up on the northeast, and then back around. So most of our delivery locations are in downtown, so the southwest, northwest, or inner southeast.
Sure, and that's really the part of Portland that seems to be less amenable to like big trucks,
right.
And places where you really want to keep the vehicle traffic to a minimum. So that you're kind of covering some of the best parts. Like farther out, where we live, it's a lot easier to get stuff around by truck, I guess. And fewer people seem to care that the trucks are there.
Right.
For better or worse. So,
and you just have less density in terms of your commercial zones and commerce.
Right.
And so the whole concept of Beeline is to take the densest part of an urban core and to deliver the goods and services that are in that area in a more sustainable fashion.
Okay.
And so not just sustainable, though, also in a cost-effective and efficient manner.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start looking at the downtown core deliveries, you have the ubiquitous white truck that's driving around. And, you see the back door go up, and it's half full.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, there are a dime a dozen downtown delivering everything from, frozen chicken to office products to who knows what else.
Right.
And it's getting 9 miles to the gallon.
And it's getting 9 miles to the gallon, and it's probably dripping oil onto the roads, and that oil is getting washed into the rivers, and, they're...
More than likely parked in the bike lane as well.
They may be parked in the bike lane or double parked, depending on
the
time of day.
We actually almost got ran over by one yesterday because they veered in, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so...
impressive.
And then on the other side, you have, your UPS and your FedEx... who are operating out of a hub and spoke model with mm-hmm. each truck. So a UPS truck will go down and it'll be its own hub.
Right.
It'll park and the guy will be walking. The guy or gal will be walking all the product to and from in a little tight radius.
Okay.
So there are various different models for getting our goods into the urban core. We're just saying, hey, we can do this with a vehicle that is far less polluting and a lot more efficient in terms of bringing those goods to the inner core.
Yeah. And much better looking.
And much better looking and doing a way that's kind of human centered.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I think that distinguishes Beeline is the fact that our riders are outside in the elements, also with the public constantly interacting. And so there's this conversation that goes on between our riders mm-hmm. and the public at large, not only about what we're doing in terms of our delivery services, but our advertising. Our riders are brand ambassadors for what's on the sides of our trikes and what's inside the trike,
right.
as well as for Beeline itself,
Which
as well as all the
they're
things
coming
we're
doing. To full stops at stop signs and things like
full
that.
Full stops at stop signs, hand signals, helmets,
lights,
lights,
camera, yeah,
exactly, turn signals. All those good things.
For sure. And that was actually, I was thinking about that. I saw one of your rigs out on Clinton Street the other day. That's my commute home from
right.
work. And it was probably about a week and a half to 2 weeks ago. And I was riding up and I was really tempted to strike up a conversation with the, is it rider, driver? How do you guys refer to them?
We refer to them as riders.
Okay. Yeah.
Riders and tricycles. Or trikes. Yeah. They are what they are.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, but I was somebody else was already in conversation with them, and it didn't look like it was somebody that they were friends with. It just looked looked like someone who said, hey, you're a Beeline rider. You know, that's awesome. Tell me about it.
And, right.
I wasn't listening on their conversation, so I don't know what they were talking about.
Talk about having your marketing built into
no kidding.
Every part
yeah.
of the company.
That's yeah, awesome. It's very much true. And not only our marketing, but that of our clients as well.
Right.
One of our original clients is Dave's Killer Bread, mm-hmm. Nature Bake. And so we run signs for them while we're delivering for their product into downtown and
sure.
inner southeast. And it's amazing how many times you'll get these shout outs. Hey, Dave, are you Dave? We love Dave.
Not to mention
and everybody's
that,
like, nope, I'm not Dave.
You may not.
I'm a woman.
No mustache, no long hair.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not, you know, 6'8 and huge. But
right, right.
But regardless, what's very interesting to see is this interaction between the public, a local delivery company, and this almost iconic local bakery that's you know, sprung up in Portland.
Yeah. So how did it get started? Where did you guys, where did the idea germinate, and how did you kind of get it established?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It really kind of surfaced from a number of different cross-sections or intersections of my life, not always kind of congruent.
Sure.
So I was I had the pleasure of living in Japan and teaching in Japan. And then after that, cycled from Japan to Ireland.
And you were telling us about that. It's
right.
a 13-month journey.
13-month, a little bit over 10,000 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was an awesome experience. And along the way, unknowingly, there are many seeds planted for doing something different. Because, you know, when you're on your bicycle traveling across the world, you just see things that are happening a little bit differently. You're at the right pace to go through life.
Yeah.
And so in doing so, saw a lot of goods being delivered all over the world by bikes of all sorts and sizes. So that was the seed that was planted. Prior to living in Japan, I worked in Bend, Oregon for David Evans and Associates as a land use and transportation planner.
Okay.
So in that job, I was, you know, looking at bicycle transportation in the Bend area and other small municipalities in Oregon and planning bike lanes and bike trails and, you know, just kind of entry-level planning work.
And good work, by the way. Bend is nice now.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's kind of fun to go ride some of those trails and say, oh, yeah, that was on the original, you know, bike trails plan that yeah. I did back in, you know, the early 90s. So that was another seed that was planted. And then in between all that time, I was teaching in the Bay Area, sixth grade at a school down in the Palo Alto, Menlo Park, Atherton area.
Okay.
And a lot of the focus that I was teaching was about community and what makes it and what keeps it going, what are kind of some of the inherent values of community. And I think that was another seed. And so when it came time to have a career switch and come up to Portland and, you know, get into a house or do different things in my life, all these kind of things came together for this nice little idea of a delivery company.
Yeah.
And then we also were in contact with a company in Boston that was doing something similar.
Okay. Which one was that?
It was at the time called the New Amsterdam Project.
Okay.
And now it is called MetroPed.
Okay. Yeah. I got in-laws in Boston, so I like to to know who to talk to when I'm over there.
Yeah. So they are using a similar vehicle, but on a different business model.
Okay.
And so we looked at the vehicle and then decided to kind of rethink the business model a little bit. And as we started to rethink the business model and really focused on this business to business last mile kind of routed delivery, that's when things started to come together.
Hmm.
And as we did that and then started to go out to possible clients and put pitches mm-hmm. out there, one of our first pitches was to Organically Grown Company,
mm-hmm.
Locally known as OGC. They're the largest distributor of organic produce in the Northwest.
Nice.
An incredibly progressive company. They have, as part of their mission, is to eliminate the fossil fuels from their whole supply chain.
The whole supply chain.
So you're looking...
Like not just carbon offsets.
Right. You're looking at them talking to their farmers about using biofuels and getting rid of some of the other petroleum-based fuels. They are looking at all their trucks going to either biodiesel or a hybrid electric biodiesel.
Mm-hmm.
And so very kind of forward-thinking and progressive company. And they basically said, hey, if you can find a warehouse with a dock space and a refrigerator and, you know, this and that, we'll give it a try. And that was 3 years ago, come February, and they have been our...
And that was sort of the seed capital for all of it.
Yeah, I mean, that was...
So to speak.
That was
seeds. Ah, okay.
Yeah, so that was our primary base client, and we deliver for them 6 days a week now. So
that's impressive. That's very cool.
Yeah, and soon after that, once we had that kind of base first client, then soon after that, Portland Roasting Company and Dave's Killer Bread came on.
Okay.
And so then we had our three kind of, no pun intended, bread and butter kind of clients.
You're in good company, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, that's great. So you've got, it's kind of like that's holding up the kind of the business.
Right.
And then you can kind of grow and develop from there.
Right.
But you got people kind of...
You said you do office supplies as well throughout downtown.
Right. Right. And so about a year ago, we were approached by Office Depot to handle all of the City Portland accounts. So the mayor's office, that's the Portlandia building, the primary police department, fire departments, auxiliary office buildings. So the deal there was, it was actually the City of Portland kind of stepped up. And they have a mandate to... have, you know, to reduce the carbon footprint. And so they went to Office Depot and said, we would like you guys to try to find a way to have a green supply chain. And Office Depot, to their credit and to all the, you know, third party logistics companies that work with, Office Depot, there's a company called Dynamics that we work closely with.
Okay.
They said, great, we'll go looking for a, another supply chain opportunity. Yeah. And found Beeline. And so about a year ago, we started delivering for them. And now we deliver for Office Depot to all the City of Portland accounts and all of PSU and the Umpqua building and a couple other buildings downtown. So roughly around 500 plus cartons a week.
So that's going to be a lot of like flats of paper, I'm guessing. And
lots of paper.
So how many pounds can these? We're going to put a picture up of the, one of the trikes.
Right.
How many pounds can this?
Our trikes will have a max payload of 800 pounds. So the thing to remember that they're electric assisted.
Yeah.
And which probably makes the difference between being able to deliver, like, say, 800 pounds of paper.
Totally.
Yeah. Up Jefferson.
Jefferson. Yeah. You just, you know, there are purists in the world and I totally respect them. But that is not going to happen.
And yeah. Those purists can ride a bike. Without an assist up Jefferson, 800 pounds.
A day-by-day business when you have to, we have to worry about our own financial sustainability.
Sure.
It's just not going
to
happen.
Well, and it's better than...
And not having to have people quit every 3 months because...
That's right.
No kidding.
Because on a paper.
Knee failure.
Yeah.
I was thinking that's better than, like, we live out here on the outer limits of the Springwater Trail. I mean, it's we're kind of in the middle of it, I guess. But there's a lot of people out here that have, like, you know, like the weed eater engine or whatever, like
right.
a two cycle sort of like
on an old Huffy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
And that I think the electric
that's
is
not what you're doing.
The electric is far better than that.
Whee! No.
Yeah, there's no sound really. Maybe a little more. So it's an amazing technology. Now we're not on the cutting edge of that technology. There's ways that we could improve it.
Sure.
And as capital comes in and we continue to grow, we'll be looking at kind of refining the whole vehicle. But we're right
solar
on the
panels
edge.
On the top.
Solar panels on the top, and you know, primarily it's all about ways to get into a lighter battery system.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
At a cost-effective point.
Yeah, and as I understand, with electronic assist or like with e-bikes or whatever, that's like the biggest problem is finding a way to store enough electricity for what your daily needs.
Right.
But also like making that as light as possible because you got to store those battery cells somewhere.
Exactly.
So,
but even in the time period, the 3 years that we've been operating. That technology has changed considerably and has the price point into like lithium ion or lithium ion carbonate batteries is just dropping and creating an interesting, you know, new market developments.
So do the batteries store inside the cargo compartment on your trikes or are they inside the frame?
With most of our trikes, they are stored just underneath the frame. So they're kind of hanging out there.
Okay.
You know, we want to maximize our payload. So
sure.
We want to make sure that that square is as clean as possible to put stuff into it.
Yeah.
So it's a constant Tetris game.
And while I was thinking about the trikes, who makes them and how did you find them?
So we have six vehicles in our fleet right now. Five of them are the base chassis kind of frame componentry. It's our Cycles Maximus trikes.
Okay.
They are originally out of England. One of them, it was 100% locally built. It's a Stites design. It's called the Truck Trike or the Trucker Trike. Okay. Kind of depends on the name. And between those six, the base chassis are all kind of there. And then the boxes that go on top of them, all the boxes were made locally and kind of custom designed for us.
Nice. And that was a separate company here that made the boxes, or?
Yeah, it's a manufacturer. You know, they do a lot of furniture and, you know, cabinetry and all sorts of steel manufacturing. So okay. It's he's an industrial design kind of Portland person. And
yeah,
we connected and, can you build us a box? Sure, I can build you a box.
That's nice. It, just a box.
Yeah, just a box.
That's all I need.
Yeah. So now the challenge for us is to continue to refine that so we can bring this the weight of everything down while we maintain the strength and the integrity of of the product.
Yeah, that's the problem with touring bicycles as well, I guess. Like it's a similar sort of thing, trying to make the bike as light as possible while still making it strong enough to withstand the rigors of touring and all that. So you have a similar challenge in front of you.
Certainly. And, you know, it's an interesting time within kind of the large cargo bike trike world is because we have, I think, for one of the first times in a long time, maybe 100 years, there's a renewed interest in having bicycles be very utilitarian.
Sure.
And to the point of carrying large loads into the urban core.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot of people manufacturing those vehicles. And so as demand kind of creeps up, interest in building them is also kind of following. But it's not like all of a sudden you have a huge market and these are very expensive trikes to make.
It's much a cottage industry, folks, so it's not like you can get that
economy
scale going.
And it's very, you know, if I were to say I need 100 of these, that would become a challenge very quickly.
It would take them forever.
Give me 8 months, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of interesting things going on within just that manufacturing base and that market area. And I expect within the 5 years we'll probably see a whole host of options available for, you know, some going to kind of just everybody who might want a cargo bike to true industry built vehicles.
Yeah. I would imagine, I mean, that's kind of, there's not a lot of good things about an economic downturn. Like there's a lot of bad aspect of that come right out, and you see them pretty evidently, pretty quickly, I think. But it also seems like that's one of the, like, people cutting costs. They're starting to think, well, maybe I can't afford to drive a large iron vehicle around, you know, downtown and let it idle all day. And
right. And a lot of it is in the running cost. Mm-hmm. So the vehicles themselves are pretty expensive. I mean, one of our trikes at initial purchase point is close to $13,000 or $14,000.
All right. That's not pocket change.
Yeah, no. So there's some capital that's needed to get into it. Mm-hmm. However, when you start looking at the long-term running cost of that vehicle, it's far less than a truck.
Yeah.
You just fuel alone. And then you look at maintenance and everything. Even if a truck breaks down, you got to pay for the tow truck to come in. And that's $150 an hour to get to your mechanic, who's going to be, you know, 150 or plus an hour. And then where does that part come from? Our trikes break down. Our mechanic will ride out there, usually do an in-the-field repair, bring it back to the warehouse, and where everything's being fixed in-house.
Yeah. Do you have an on-call mechanic then, or like your
We have a full fleet mechanic, and he's incredible.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's just an awesome combination of understanding what a big vehicle needs with kind of the intricacies of bicycle componentry and all the odds and little bits and pieces of the electronic world.
So yeah.
Very, very valuable employee.
I would imagine that's a skill set that's hard to find. Like where did you find a guy that knows both about electronics and bike mechanics?
Just start asking around. Yeah.
I was going to say, that sounds like Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a hard skill set to find.
Sure.
You know, especially somebody who's interested in dealing with these larger vehicles. Mm. There's a lot of bike mechanics, but when you start to look at, this is really almost more like a motorcycle,
right?
In some ways. And so you start to kind of go over this little hybrid world of the mechanics. And, you know, there are definitely folks who know both worlds. And
it's a small overlap in the Venn diagram.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of it, you know, we focus a lot on the vehicles because they're kind of cool.
Yeah.
They're the thing that is out there.
For sure.
But they're just a tool.
Uh-huh.
And it's really the business model around kind of creating a more sustainable delivery service that I think is really the lifeblood of the company.
Yeah.
So
was yeah. Go ahead.
No, shifting from the vehicle itself to like the city. So you have a background in doing some transportation planning. This is kind of a niche question, I guess, for everybody listening in Portland.
We're a niche podcast.
Well, no. So you're covering the area where most of our like bike infrastructure development money is going. If mm-hmm. you could pinpoint a few things that you would improve in that radius that you talked about in Portland, I'd love to know what, especially when you're like looking at trying to like, wow, I hate that the only good route for us is going up that big son of a bitch hill.
Right.
Things like that. Like, yeah. I feel like they're trying, but there's a few very clear breakpoints that they yeah. need to improve.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Number one is reopen the Morrison Bridge.
Yeah.
No kidding. I heard that. I was
thinking that's exactly what you would say. Good.
I heard it just reopened. Like it's just like in the past week or something, Bike Portland put up a thing where you could finally ride your bike across the Morrison Bridge again. But
oh, that's news to me, but that's very okay. good news. I'll be telling my staff that tomorrow morning. For us, that's critical because that yeah. puts us right
that's
smack
right where
into
you
downtown.
Guys are at, right?
Right. Yeah. And the other thing is that, you know, for all the controversy of the bike facilities on that bridge, it mm-hmm. is a wide path.
And it's one of the most centrally located bridges.
It is.
It's one of the, I guess it's the one that the I-5 freeway kind of drops you onto if you're getting off of that on a vehicle.
Yep.
But it's also, yeah, the Hawthorne Bridge is pretty far south of the downtown core. It gets right. you there, but then you have to kind of retrack or backtrack. Right. The Steel Bridge is overrun by joggers and people who don't know what they're yeah. doing on bikes and people who don't know what they're doing on the trail in general. So,
and you know, each bridge has its own unique features when you're on a bike, especially when you're a big trike. We use the Burnside quite mm-hmm. a bit.
Sure.
And
they've recently, I mean, in the past like 5 years or something, they've redeveloped that to be very friendly to bicycles as yeah. Compared to what it was before.
Certainly. It's got a really nice wide bike lane on it. And, you know, even though you're right next to all the traffic, you know, the traffic speeds across it are never quite that high. Mm-hmm. And there's an interesting traffic pattern, especially with the new Cooch Burnside couplet that's come through.
Right.
The Hawthorne Bridge is the approaches to the Hawthorne are the shallowest. And so it's most perhaps bicycle friendly and for, you know, a daily commuter.
Right.
But you're looking at, you know, very high volume bicycle commutes.
Like everyone uses the Hawthorne.
Everyone uses it. And you've got this very sketchy kind of bi-directional, you know, pedestrians going one way, bicyclists going another.
Well, and the
a
bicyclists
big drop.
Are still salmoning on it. Yeah. It's horrendous.
So that would be another one. I would really spend some time rethinking that and maybe just do one directional for all forms
right.
of transport. And so you have, you know,
or even putting little soft like studs on the road or on the pathway or something yeah. to clearly market it
or something
like seriously stay on this side of the road if you're a yeah. pedestrian.
And as much as I like bicycle tourism, you got the place downtown that rents those
the curb bikes,
yeah. Surrey things,
right.
With a fringe on top, and yeah. they're all kind of salmoning and going the wrong
certainly.
Direction and not caring, not giving a shit. So
right, or you might get caught behind a big beeline trike on the Hawthorne and be cursing us because you can't. You know, we take up the majority of that bridge.
I'm glad you said that, not I.
Yeah, and I, you know, one of the things that we work with a lot with our riders is being very hyper aware of the other cyclists out
sure.
there and always looking over and moving over and being as mm-hmm. courteous as possible because
yeah.
in the end, we're out there to alleviate congestion, not create it.
Right, right.
So that's the same whether we're on a busy road or on the trikes, on the bike lane or whatnot.
And yeah. when you're creating congestion for those who are already smug about not having congestion, it really fucking ruins our whole thing.
No yeah. kidding.
Well, we all have our own purist in us.
Yeah, exactly.
Indeed. Yeah. I was going to say, we've only got a couple minutes probably before you should cut out, but you want to tell us about the B Corp idea? Because
yeah.
this is something that I'm not much of an entrepreneur, but I've heard people talk about. I've heard it as the triple bottom line where you have multiple wins that kind of qualify as a successful business.
Right.
So tell us right. your perspective on that.
Yeah, it's really an interesting movement. So, and Beeline is a certified B Corporation. And it's kind of was part and parcel to the founding of the company
yeah.
is to try to become one of these newfangled corporations. And it kind of putting it's not really a new spin, but it's to some degree, getting back to what corporations were originally meant to be in our country.
Sure.
And these are these business entities that exist to kind of help facilitate or be a catalyst to a common good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And particularly in terms of a social and environmental impact, while also being fiscally sound.
Sure.
And when you think about it, businesses have an inherent drive to be successful just purely based on their bottom line, their financial bottom line. They got to be successful. They're going to fail. You know, you can't go out and get more grants or more funding. I mean, every time you go out to try to get
funding.
There is
no safety net unless you're an LLC. But
unless you're too big to fail. But yeah,
it's very challenging that way. So you have this internal drive. So if you have this internal drive and you can embed concepts of sustainability in terms of your environmental footprint and also social impact into your business model, then it really truly becomes a win-win. Mm-hmm. And when you start to looking at what does that mean at Beeline, so we've got a base business model, which is saying, okay, get out there and reduce congestion, reduce our carbon footprint, do things cost-effectively and efficiently within the urban core. And then what we also do through our B-Share program is that when our trikes are empty, we look to fill them with goods that are coming primarily produce, which is coming off the line at places like Whole Foods or New Seasons.
Sure.
Or some of the banquet centers. And we take that kind of rescued food and we take it right into the shelters.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll take it right into Sisters of the Road or Portland Rescue Mission or St. Francis Dining Hall. And that is built into our routes. So we can actually deliver a meal or the contents thereof at a far lower cost than it traditionally is.
Right, because you've already been out delivering something.
Exactly. So we're just leveraging the fact that our trikes are out there to provide the social impact.
Mm-hmm.
And we've totally changed the menus and the quality of food that's coming into the shelters.
I would imagine.
By purely getting, you know, healthy organic food right to where it's needed.
Sure.
Most.
Well, I mean, it's been a long time. I think back in like 2001 is the last time I volunteered at a homeless shelter, but I remember they were serving like leftover chicken McNuggets and that sort of thing.
Right.
It's not good food.
Right. So, I mean, yesterday we delivered, you know, fresh pomegranates and rutabaga and potatoes and kale and all these different things that we picked up at Whole Foods in the Pearl, dropped it six blocks away at Sisters of the Road.
Right.
No charge or low charge?
It's so the B-Shares was funded in a variety of creative manners. Mm-hmm. You can actually go online and buy a B-Share. $20 will basically feed for 40 meals. So it's just bshares.com. You get that done. We're also in a fee for service with Sisters of the Road, because they have realized the advantage of having fresh produce delivered to their door day by day by day.
No
kidding. Well, and the amounts of manpower you're spending just trying to remind volunteers to do that very simple task.
And they don't have their volunteer staff used to have to rent a zip car, go and glean the product, bring it back, and then cook it. And now all their volunteers can be focused right on cooking.
Right.
So when you pull that, so that's a model of a B corporation that's saying, how can we leverage our business sense and our business mind and embed it into our principles and our practices.
Yeah.
The other key thing that the B Corporations does is it changes the corporate bylaws to say that all the stakeholders in your community are there to be benefited, not just your shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a major difference between other corporate bylaws.
And like you were saying, that is what corporations were originally built for.
Certainly.
Was this is a circumstantial, like it was conditional for like, okay, we're going to build a bridge or we're going to clear out a gulch or something like that.
Or the railroads.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And certainly, you know, people made tons of money on those endeavors and became very wealthy and very successful. And, you know, you could argue some of the benefits of the railroads and whatnot, but it's a very different style of corporation than what we're seeing today.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. One more thing. I was just thinking about the whole Sisters of the Road thing. Like, I went down one time. I think there was a Chinook book coupon for a free meal at Sisters of the Road. And we should put a link up to them too. They're a great organization.
Yeah,
that does great stuff. There are volunteers when I was there, we're already so focused on providing an experience with dignity and an experience with honor for all of the people who come in to eat there. you know, no matter what their status is. And I was very impressed with that. And so being able to free up some of those volunteers' time to spend even more time focusing on the people that are there is really valuable. So
yeah, it's an incredible organization. We're very pleased to be able to be working with them, as well as Portland Rescue Mission and St. Francis Dining Hall.
Yeah.
And to have other partners on the other side, Dave's Killer Bread and Whole Foods primarily being on the donating side. I mean, we've been able to rescue over 70,000 pounds of food in the year and a half that we've been doing this, and that equates to about 85,000 meals at a cost point of about 50 cents a meal.
Right, and it's food that would otherwise be discarded and meals that would otherwise have to be provided with donor dollars or something like that on the other end. So
it's another win-win type of situation because you're looking at not only providing just not only food, but very healthy food to those who may be in the greatest amount of need, to the fact that you're also rescuing food that would be going either into a compost or into a landfill.
Right, right.
And so there are, you know, just your environmental components associated with that.
Yeah.
Well, so it's been a wonderful opportunity to kind of use our trikes at the greatest extent.
No kidding.
And there's benefit to us as well, because we get to extend our advertising time. We're on the road more. There's more exposure, and we can kind of continue to build our fleet.
Yeah. Well, Franklin Jones, you're a goddamn hero. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for doing all the stuff that you've done.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Brandon.
Okay.
we'll stop the tape and let you get on with your day. But thank you so much for coming and talking with us. And we look forward to seeing you and your fleet out there on the roads in Portland.
All right. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Definitely.
All right. Upcoming shows. On December 11th, Alex Roth is the Pepper Peddler.
Okay.
On the 18th, our friend Gina Robinson on urban farming and food plentitude.
We get to talk to her again. We haven't talked to her for a couple of years.
We're going
to
be Skyping?
Yeah.
That's with the internet, right?
That is over the internet.
Okay. Cool. I've heard of that. The day after Christmas will be the Pedal Powered Family.
That's a pre-recorded interview.
Hi. And then... finally, on the second day of the new year, Tom Labonte of Tom's Cargo Bikes.
Yeah, and that's the guy that's building my tall bike, which is almost
done. And you're
going
to have it by then.
I'm so excited.
Oh, my God. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I want an entire episode recorded from the tall bike, and I'll be in the little caddy below. It'll be great.
Perfect.
Okay, that does it for the show.
It sounds like a plan. Well, hey, this has been the Sprocket Podcast. We thank you all for joining us. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. You can email us at...
thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Our phone number is 503-890... Oh, man, I can't remember it. Hang on.
503-847-9774.
Oh, nicely done. Okay, there we go. And our Twitter handle is @sprocketpodcast. Ryan J. Lane gives us our theme music. He's on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. Hurt Bird gives us our headline sounder there at hurtbirdmusic.com. Thanks so much. We wish you all the best. Until next time.
Hasta luego.
Hasta luego. That means goodbye. And see you later.
Whatever.
Okay. Cheers.